in these bleak times by coming to a lecture on Georgic literature. And it's great, actually, to have seen so much interest in this from various friends around the world. So that's just great. So I'd like to begin with an English harvest song. And the thing to remember is that the singer is the servant of the song. So this is about the song. We get up in the morn and we sound the harvest horn. Our master is harvest for to mind. First thing we take in hand is the stopper from the can, sir, which man may drink until the bottom he find. Then each man must play his part and work with hand and heart, while the glorious sun do shine, while the glorious sun do shine. Our master brings the can, he's a jolly-hearted man. Come, me lads, and take a drop of the best. And don't you stand and prattle when you hear the wagons rattle, for the sun, he is a-turning to the west, for the sun, he is a-turning to the west. Here's the farmer's daughter dear, brews us plenty of strong beer, which is enough to cheer up any soul. So each man may drink and say, heaven bless this happy day, when we crown the harvest with a flowing bowl, flowing bowl. When we crown the harvest with a flowing bowl. So here we are in an estate village. The harvest horn has sounded at the beginning of the day, and at the harvest home at the end of the day, the harvest bowl is flowing. And one of the useful ways of distinguishing what Georgic literature is to make a comparison with pastoral literature. So I'm going to ask, is this song pastoral or Georgic? And does it matter? Well, it's a celebration of harvesting, agricultural activity, so it's clearly Georgic. Georgic is literature concerned with the detail of agricultural activity. Or you could say it's an idealization of rural life, and therefore pastoral. Work with hand and heart is the only reference to work, and mostly it's about drinking. So quite clearly, it's an idealization. No mention of sweat. Sweat will be a theme running through this presentation. So are the singing rural workers singing this song being encouraged to falsify their hard labor in a pastoral song for the audience up at the big house or their community? Or are they entitled to make a joke of it in an ironic Georgic song, make a joke of it by concentrating on the necessary rehydration rather than the work and making it ironic? Do they express a real love of harvest time? Well, you might think they do. That seems to be what the whole purpose of the song is. Does the song express any sense of ecology? Well, some work is taking place in some field somewhere, and it has the beginning and the end of a working day, a sense of a cycle and of a rhythm inside it. So reading and debating representations of nature in culture like this, informed by ecology, is what eco-criticism is. So eco-criticism asks these kinds of questions about what is being said about nature by the culture of this song. And for those of you who are new to eco-criticism, which really began in 1990 in America with the first conference of the Association for Studies of Literature and Environment, ASLE, here's a quote from what I think is the first mention of eco-criticism by an American critic in 1978. In which he says, perhaps that old pair of antagonists, science and poetry, can be persuaded to lie down together and be generative after all. And I must say that eco-criticism has had some problems in engaging with science. Which science? Whose science? And the intention of eco-criticism to be interdisciplinary has really been plagued by the problems of interdisciplinarity in our culture, in which I, at the age of 16, was asked to choose arts or sciences. The poet Ted Hughes went into the arts sixth in his grammar school. So here is a foundational text of British eco-criticism, 1991. Jonathan Bate wanted this to be, he said in his introduction, a preliminary sketch towards a literary eco-criticism. And that was the first time in English culture that a literary eco-criticism had been proposed. In this book, Jonathan Bate says it will be a shame for future generations not to recognize the twittering of swallows at the end of Keats' Ode to Autumn, because swallows will not have been migrating to England because they can't battle the strong winds that climate warming would generate in the Northern Hemisphere. Our colleague Stephen Moss, author of The Swallow, A Biography, says that's nonsense. Jonathan Bate makes no reference, incidentally, to the science that actually backs up that statement. And Stephen says, actually, there are a lot more factors going to be influencing whether swallows can continue to migrate here, not the least of which will be farming practices. So I'm going to show you two paintings, which I found in the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford just before actually giving a lecture on pastoral. And if we were able to talk to each other, I'd say these exemplify key features of pastoral and of Georgic. And what would you say they were? So here's the first painting. The Doric columns clearly tell you that we're in classical Greece. And it's a rather luxuriant classical Greece beside the Mediterranean there. We can see Hellenic warriors hunting the stag. And this appears to be a leisure activity conducted in this lovely weather here. And so we might say that this is a classic pastoral painting by Claude Lorrain. However, the brilliant separation between the arrow and the deer actually holds some evidence of at least two Georgic activities taking place. First of all, on the sea, there might be a boat that is fishing in the activity of piscatorial Georgic. And there appear to be two people herding animals across the landscape in the center of this painting. And in fact, that is not an ordinary deer. That deer is the daughter, is the pet of Sylvia, who's the daughter of the royal herdsman. And this is a famous moment in which a Trojan War is about to be started by the killing of the pet deer of the royal herdsman. The royal herdsman, of course, part of a Georgic activity. Here, on the other hand, well, I think this is likely to be Somerset. This is by Tristram Hillier. And Tristram Hillier lived in East Pennard in Somerset. And I think, although there's no work taking place here, I think you can tell the conditions under which this work takes place. Here are cart tracks. Here's a broken down gate. There does appear to be a strip of vegetable crops being grown in there, a strip that's reminiscent of strip farming, like crofting strips up in the Western Highlands. And those two trees on the right have quite clearly recently been coppiced, and the next tree on the left is just recovering from coppicing. So there is example here of Georgic activity taking place. And this is actually named for a farmer, Trot, it's his lane. And there's the title of the landscape painting. It is a landscape painting in a tradition of landscape painting, but it's quite clearly referring to a classical myth. And here's a third painting, a very recent painting, which has not been shown yet, by the Lake District artist Julian Cooper, the third generation of landscape painters in the Heaton Cooper family in the Lake District. And this is one of a series of recent paintings he's been doing with a downward prospect as compared with an upward prospect of his father and grandfather's tradition of Lake District paintings. Julian likes to make paintings about the intersection of culture and nature, and so the presence of the track and of the stone walls are very important parts of this painting. You can see that the fields have been cut for hay. This is called Winter Sunshine. So I love that kind of orange winter glow. The sheep, which would be here in the summer, are in the intake fields, of course, close to the farm in winter. And this appears to be a wonderfully lit Lake District pastoral painting. But in fact, every change of tone of colour in this painting is as a result of human agricultural activity, which Julian explained to me goes back generations in this landscape. So in fact, this is an image that might appear to be pastoral, but is actually representing a history of Georgic activity in this downward view of a landscape. So what are the foundational texts of pastoral and of Georgic? Well, they're both by Virgil. They're both originally in Latin. The eclogues of Virgil were based on the Greek of Theocritus, who wrote the Idylls, from which we get the word idyllic, which gives you a lot of clues about the nature of pastoral. And the Georgic tradition of writing about husbandry and agricultural practices comes from the Georgics of 27 BC, the year when Virgil, we know, presented this long poem in four books to the court, which he based on the Greek of Hesiod, whose book Works and Days he wanted to very much imitate. So from the eclogues, here's an example of pastoral. Tityrus, hear you loll, your slim reed pipe serenading the woodland spirit beneath the spread of sheltering beech. So that lolling and the reed pipe came to be symbols of pastoral literature, and that loll came to be called otium by classical scholars. On the other hand, the Georgic, from the second book of the four books of the Georgics, first, trees know various ways of propagation. Some grow of their own accord, with no control of human hand. So the Georgics is about getting to know how trees have their own ways of propagation and the interventions of the human hand, and how they can tune in with those ways of propagation for the benefit of growing food. Here, under pastoral, we might say these three lines are pastoral. Before Jove's time, no settlers brought the land under subjugation. Earth, unprompted, was free with all her fruit. So here's the otium, you lay back, you loll back, and the fruits of the earth drop into your hands and into your mouth freely. And here is Georgic activity. Well, graft your pears, Meliboeus, and set your vines in rows. May your bees fly never to swarm on poisonous yew trees. So here's knowledge of grafting, here's setting vines in rows, and here's planting your beehives well away from poisonous yew trees. But in fact, those pastoral three lines come from the Georgics, and those four lines that refer to Georgic activity actually come from the Eclogues. So within each of the founding texts, there are elements of the other. You need to be on your toes around this material. Things are not always what they seem. So here is a modern pastoral image, a solar farm. This is a new kind of farming, a solar farm undersown with meat and wool. And here is a modern Georgic image of the shepherd. Simply because he's on his quad bike doesn't mean that he doesn't know each of these sheep individually and is eyeing up. You can see the ewe which leads the other ewes and lambs through the merest hole in a hedge or fencing into neighbors' fields and causes a lot of problems that he needs to sell on at the next market as soon as possible. Virgil actually regarded pastoral as being a lowly, humble form of poetry in short forms, and Georgic being more elevated. And in fact, the Book of the Georgics ends with a myth. And he regarded epic as a much higher form that he wanted to aspire to and to imitate the great Greek models in front of him. And this hierarchy of forms came to be accepted into the 18th century in their own conceptions of literature. In the 18th century, there was a great interest, a surge of interest in Georgic poetry and Georgic writing, particularly associated with land reforms going on in the 18th century. So we find that a lot of people who've written about Georgic literature our 18th century scholars. So, to the Georgics of Virgil. Well, it's a poetic handbook of husbandry in four books. The first one is about crops. Here we've got a maize field, a modern maize field, of course, grown to produce meat at the end of this production. Trees. Here is our shepherd, Kirk, deep in the base of a tree in a hedgerow, conducting an ancient practice along with coppicing and pollarding, and that is hedge laying here. Incidentally, the fence in the background is the fence to my garden, and I've chosen these images within walking distance of my home, as the current phrase is, partly to indicate that the four books of the Georgics relate to modern activities. And here are goats, lots of goats in Mediterranean literature, pastoral and Georgic. This is the goat farm at Wookie, where a builder, Ian, and a teacher, Sarah, bought 42 acres of land outside our village and moved out of London to start a goat farm with a campsite. And the diversification of Georgic is something that I'll come on to. But animals was the third book. And the fourth book concerned bees. These are Collins beehives up my lane. He is a resident at Glastonbury Festival every year as the resident bee expert, and where bees swarm on the site, Collins called in to collect them. So, crops, trees, animals, bees. And actually, the Georgics are more descriptive than they are didactic, although they are radical in recommending rotation. But bees become, in the fourth book, an allegory of society, and the fourth book ends with the Orpheus story. So it goes into allegory and myth at the end of that. Virgil didn't get all of his science right. And he said in the fourth book that if you leave out the husk of a calf, you will find that a swarm of bees spontaneously is produced by the dead calf corpse. And of course, this is echoed in the Bible, in Samson's riddle, in the book of Judges, out of the strong came forth sweetness. This is called by classical scholars by the name of begonia. It's a wonderful error. Virgil makes other errors in the Georgic. So I want to illustrate now a British Georgic tradition. Right from 1599, Thomas Moss, the items in green are poetry. The silkworms, John Phillips' cider, a tradition from which we benefit in Somerset. 1757, John Dyer's long poem, The Fleece. And in 1923, the wheelwright's shop of George Stewart. We forget, I think, that F.R. Leavis and Dennis Thompson in Culture and Environment were recommending The Wheelwright's Shop as a school set text. It was very popular during the 1930s into 40s. Rita Sackville-West's long poem, The Land, and from Scotland, the first volume in his trilogy, Lewis Cressick Gibbon's Sunset Song, is a novel very much informed by the detail of hard work in the land. And 1939, another popular book by a farm labourer, Fred Kitchen, whose book Brother to the Ox was written after he joined a WEA class in Worksop. Fred Kitchen's Brother to the Ox is part of this long British tradition of Georgic literature in all those three forms. So a bit of a taste from The Thresher's Labour by Stephen Duck, self-educated Wiltshire farm labourer from 1736. This is about labour, you'll notice, and it's from an actual thresher, a person involved in the harvest himself. And he wrote this very much to correct the pastoral idealisation of Alexander Pope's pastorals. But when the scorching sun is mounted high, and no kind barns with friendly shade are nigh, our weary sides entangle in the grass, while streams of sweat run trickling down apace. Sides entangling in the grass. This man knows the problem of using a scythe. And in writing this poem, I think makes what I think must be one of the first references to sweat in English poetry. I was interested to know whether sweat had appeared in the foundational texts. And I consulted a Greek scholar. Actually, he was German, but he's a scholar of Greek, who I found myself sitting next to in Oxford at a dinner after my pastoral lecture. And I said, is there sweat right back in Hesiod? And he said, yes. Hesiod says, the gods have put the sweat of virtue at some remove. It's difficult to attain virtue. And I think the assumption is that the sweat of virtue here refers to farm labor. And also, I consulted a Latin scholar, Holly Ranger, who told me that Virgil does use the word for sweat, but it's about the problem of skin diseases that sheep can develop if their sweat's not washed off after they're shorn. I love this detail. So I think that Stephen Duck's real human sweat in scything is a new kind of use of sweat in literature. Laura Sayer has pointed out that although during the first decade of the 21st century, there were, I think, five translations of the Georgics produced, generally eco-critics have tended to neglect Georgic writing. The fact that Georgics and their Georgic and the Georgic continue to be so frequently overlooked suggests the stubborn narrowness of our understanding of the human environment dilemma. And so here the human the dilemma of how humans interact with the environment in a sustainable relationship is surely the subject of Georgic literature, but it has very much been overlooked by eco-critics. And in fact, she might have had in mind the first edition of my pastoral book of 20 years ago, an omission that's been corrected by the inclusion of a new chapter on Georgic literature in the second edition. But she might also have had in mind Raymond Williams, who refers to the Georgics only three times in his influential critique of the pastoral tradition, The Country and the City, as if Georgic were a simple side stream off the great flow of pastoral cross currents. And that has been a common attitude amongst people writing about pastoral, that Georgic is a little side stream, a substratum, as it were, of the great pastoral tradition. So what's William's criteria for good Georgic in The Country and the City? Well, of the Georgics of Virgil, he says what needs to be emphasized is not only the emergence of the idealizing tone. He's very much into idealization coming out in the Georgics themselves, following from a pastoral tradition, but also that it's not yet abstracted. Abstraction is negative for Raymond Williams, from the whole of a working country life. So representing a working country life is the criteria for good Georgics for Raymond Williams. So the wheelwright shop, he says, is a version of a part imagined and part observed rural England. And that part imagined bit is a negativity as far as he's concerned. And of Brother to the Ox, he says, it's one of the very few direct and unmediated accounts of a rural labourer's life. So direct and unmediated is for Raymond Williams what makes for good Georgic writing. But can there be unmediated accounts of a rural labourer's life in literature? Should this social realism be the measure of good Georgic writing? There have been Georgic scholars who have gone off on the didactic elements of Virgil's Georgics and used the term Georgics to refer to all didactic writing. So do we focus on the descriptive qualities of Georgic or the didactic qualities? And the realism of rural work might stand authentically for itself, or it might be read by some people as a metaphor for labour. And so we get a Georgic writing referring to war, Georgic writing such as Wordsworth's peripatetic poetry, Anne Wallace says, fills in the vacuum left by 17th century interest in Georgic. Well, to come clean then, here's the first of two statements which I'm going to provocatively offer about Georgic. For me, Georgic writing relishes the detail of husbandry, humans working with nature, learning its rules for growing stuff, facing its intransigence, adapting and learning with honesty and authenticity. This is Virgil's starting point, but he ranges into allegory. So Seamus Heaney, for example, can start a Georgic poem with an agricultural implement and range in the poem into memory and symbolism, which he does in the poem The Bailer in Human Chain. I like to keep coming back to Virgil, and to be rooted a little bit in the challenges that Virgil offers us. And here in the marvelous translation of Cecil Day Lewis is Virgil. Lucky is he who can learn the roots of the universe, has mastered all his fears and fate's intransigence. So learning the roots of the universe, working with nature to produce crops, trees, animals, bees in the Georgics, involves mastering the fears and commitment of the farmer, and of course weather and soils and geology, fate's intransigence. So to summarize then, where pastoral deals with idealization, responsibility is at the bottom of Georgics, and where pastoral is concerned with the aesthetics, the practical is at the bottom of Georgics, as is labor. And as I mentioned, otium is opposed by negotium of labor. And where pastoral writing describes landscapes, Georgic is describing agriculture in those landscapes. Delight versus drudgery. The academic reads pastoral, but the Georgic is written by the farmer, the person who knows that detail of husbandry and has learned the law of generations, is concerned with care for land and nature, and knows the science of planting, harvesting, growing, and production, as opposed to the imaginative flights of the pastoral tradition. And in the word of George Monbiot, enchantment might be said to be what is sought from pastoral literature, whereas in the words of Isabella Tree, return of nature is one of the concerns for the contemporary farmer in rewilding. Well, David Farrar, the 18th century critic, has drawn up a contrast of what he calls the pastoral Georgic tradition in Wordsworth's work. And here we can see it summarized from his 2015 essay, Georgic complicates pastoral. Georgic's concerned with struggle. And in his 2016 essay, he emphasizes the ameliorating quality of Georgic and the quality of cooperation that is involved in Georgic. David Farrar examined the PhD of Juan Christian Pellicer, who has written extensively on Georgic literature, and Pellicer takes a slightly different view, and he believes in generic mixtures actually taking place, as I've illustrated is already present in Virgil. And he says, pastoral and Georgic should be appreciated in the fluid context of generic intermixture, the dynamic interplay of genres that drives classical literature as well as English literature, very much from a 17th century critic's point of view. How far does this remain true for contemporary Georgics? Well, Pellicer says that compound descriptive labels are necessary when we're discussing Georgic and pastoral literature. For example, Augustan formal Georgic of the 18th century is quite different from vernacular pastoral with which I began, and we need a term, urban Georgic, which would be about growing trees, parks and greenery in urban contexts, and pastoral elegy is a category of elegy of pastoral that we need to make. And I've added satirical pastoral. You can't believe everything you see in the farmyard, as my neighbour's farm revealed to me recently. So here's the second of my proposed eco-critical distinctions. And I would say there's no such thing as pastoralized Georgic. The detail of labor, the discipline of techniques and knowledge must be present, as must engagement with nature's elements and processes. So I would find it difficult to justify the term industrial Georgic. And for me, Georgic is a mode, it's never a concept. If it becomes a concept, it's a pastoral. So Georgic is a mode of writing that is disciplined by the detail of techniques of husbandry. So Georgic is to pastoral as wildlife is to nature, with a capital N, as habitat is to greenery, as mode is to concept. So, I like Alistair Fowler reminding us that genre is much less of a pigeonhole than a pigeon. If Georgics is a genre that follows the foundational text of the genre, the Georgics, Alistair Fowler says, well, the pigeons fly very much between pastoral and Georgic. In fact, the pigeons of the 21st century Georgic writing rarely fly back to Virgilian pigeonholes, despite James Rebank's three references to the Georgics in his recent book, English Pastorals. Virgilian Georgic seems to be rarely referenced by 21st century contemporary Georgic writing. Even so, it's useful to ask of rewilding texts at what point on the pastoral Georgic divide should they be read? And to ask this question is to open a crucial discussion about emphasis and evaluation in George Monbiot's book Feral and Isabella Tree's book Wilding, both of which are about rewilding. But this distinction of emphasis and this question of evaluation matters hugely to the future of landscape and farming in this country. Can a post-pastoral responsibility that is founded in Georgic adaptability still be called farming or husbandry or even nature in the political and policy possibilities of the present? So I regard George Monbiot's book Feral as being very much a polemic, provocative work in a pastoral tradition, because it's very much idealized. He's searching for enchantments, you'll notice, on the frontiers of rewilding. Whereas Isabella Tree is concerned with the return of nature to a British farm in the subtitle of her book, Wilding, which I very much admire for the compromises that the NEP estate about which she's writing has to make in order to have free-range cattle being produced on the estate, which is crisscrossed by public footpaths where dog walkers run their dogs. This influences the choice of cattle that they have on the estate. They have to keep bulls separate in order to control the birth of calves, because calving takes place in remote and odd corners of the estate. And they would spend the whole year searching these corners in order to be able to ear tag the calves, which they must do by DEFRA standards in order to be able to sell the meat from their cattle. So all these sorts of compromises, practical compromises, as well as the wonderful celebration of what happens when the turtle dove on the cover of Wilding returns to NEP estate together with all of the other aspects of nature which are a byproduct of rewilding the Nepa State. So I regard that as being very much a Georgic text. Well, Seamus Heaney in a late essay talked about the staying power of pastoral, and I would argue for the staying power of Georgic. So here's a selection of contemporary Georgic writing. The green is poetry, and Ted Hughes's Moortown Diary is a series of diary poems written at the end of a day from sheep farming on Moortown Farm, close to where he lives. Alice Oswald interviews people who work alongside the River Dart and turns that into a poetry collection. Here's my only example of gardening, a book about gardening. This is non-fiction prose in black, about gardening produce to produce for the River Cottage restaurant. Here's a novel in blue from Wales about the loss of a cow one day and the way in which that brings out the tensions in a farming family. Countryfile has been a huge success on TV, and inevitably we have Georgic non-fiction prose publication from Adam Henson. I'm mentioning a novel by John Crace. And James Rebank's The Shepherd's Life was a fantastic bestseller in 2015 about his farming on the family sheep farm in Cumbria. A novel from Wales, another novel set in Cumbria by Marie Elsie Bragg, Melvin Bragg's daughter, a book from Ireland, a memoir about growing up with his father, who's a cowman. Helen Jukes' book about urban Georgics of setting up a beehive in terraced houses in an urban context. And she actually seeks out Virgil's Georgics for advice. Tim Pearce has written a trilogy of novels which are very much detailed in their husbandry practices around the First World War in the West Country. Mentioned Isabella. And here's the book which has husbandry in the title. So here's some of contemporary. I've mentioned Miller Harris. And very popular novel, All on the Barley. I had mentioned Pilgrim, The Last of Spain. I think it's cool. What between two books, it might appear to be so. But there's one here, it's a black of rural. It's not Georgic, but it is attention. It's called post-pastoral. These are ultimately debating points to take us into a more deep discussion and evaluation of changes of our readers, and I'm hoping that this presentation will agree. So to return to here of the modern shepherd. In fact, this is a Georgic image which is serving a pastoral function for Morrison's supermarket. A pastoral function is to make good land and other products inside the supermarket. And in the search presentation, this image actually produced a poem, which comes to an English
Sorry, Terry, you're...
Georgian book. I think that there's great insights in James Freebanks.
Terry, you're breaking up a little bit. I'm not quite sure what happened to the sound there. Oh, it's, yes, I think Terry needs to rejoin. Matthew, you have your hand up.
Yes, I was just going to comment on the quality of the sound, that was all.
The sound, yeah.
You were trying to, reach him, and he didn't seem to hear you, so I just wanted to...
Yeah. Hopefully he'll rejoin us in a tick and continue.
Thank you.
Georgic in a moment. So
yes, Terry, what slide are we meant to be on?
Prefix pastoral.
Prefix pastoral, okay.
I'm moving really fast.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yep. So in the pastoral book, I drew attention to what I call prefix pastoral, and I've just added car park pastoral to that from the previous images, but radical pastoral, neo-pastoral, all of the gay sex pastoral, all of these are being used by people. Each of these I've got a reference for. And I want to, dark pastoral I found really useful of Heather Sullivan, and have used that myself. And I've said that with the expansion of prefix pastorals, the pastoral has completed a shift from genre to mode, and from mode to concept. So this is very much conceptual, the idea of urban pastoral, militarized pastoral. And if Georgics began with genre and shifted into mode, I've been arguing that it doesn't shift into this kind of conceptual prefix pastoral. So I'm going to present prefix Georgic. And each of these are actually based on the Georgic detail and discipline in their texts. And this is a list that Samuel there in Shanghai drew up in his research at Bar Spa over the last year. And each of these is referenced. It ends with Eco-Georgic, which David Farer proposed for 18th century Georgic, which raises the question, when is Georgic not eco? What would un-eco-Georgic look like? So where, for example, is the literature of industrial farming of the East Anglian prairies? Well, it might be there in Australia, in the Australian wheatlands, in the poetry of John Kinsella. I can't think of a British example. Although, I would say, isn't this really an anti-pastoral text, as the cover of The Silo, A Pastoral Symphony, quite clearly communicates to us. Pastoral is being used here ironically. But actually, John Kinsella does have a lot of respect for the workers of these wheatlands. Here's an extract from the poem Harvest. And the headers are rolling through the crops like electric shavers, the clean cut as the stalks are dragged into the comb, and the heads ripped away, quail and snakes dispersing, the sun sealing the cuts with a coppery swathe, the drivers adjusting their headphones as dust drills the windows. So here, I think, is an Australian Georgic, which spends a a lot of time actually celebrating the workers of these wheat lands. And the old traditions, the silo of the title is an old silo that is no longer used in the poem of that name. So I think this is, although this is intended to be anti-pastoral, I think it certainly has some important Georgic qualities. And what about Ted Hughes' poem, 1984 on the Tarka Trail, a poem from the river sequence in which he refers to his bird-watching neighbouring farmer who puts 300 weight of 20, 10, 10 to the acre. So this is a line of poetry. It's followed by 100 weight and a half of straight nitrum. Now, Hughes the poet says to the reader, now you are as loaded with the data that cultivates his hopes in this brief gamble as this river is, as he is too. So knowingly loading the poem with the data of agricultural pollution, Hughes's purpose is to point out that the river and the farmer and all of us are loaded with this material. So I'm coming towards the end now with some other prefix Georgics in recent use. And I want to come to piscatorial Georgic, which Samuel thought I'd invented, but I think must have been referred to earlier. Piscatorial Georgic surely is in Ted Hughes's poems in the collection River, but what about fish farms? Where's the poetry on fish farms? Here is Aminsui Castle on the Isle of Harris, which I photographed in October, where Ted Hughes came fishing, stayed here at this fishing lodge in 1981. That is the sea on the left. And coming down just out of the frame on the left here is the river up which the salmon migrate to spawn. But of course, in support of the business of piscatorial Georgic activity, there is now a hatchery which is helping the salmon produce more young for the fishermen. And the river itself has to be changed, and little low weirs create pools for the fishermen to fish the salmon in as they rest in these pools. This is the Grimester River, which Ted Hughes fished in 1986, which I photographed in October on the Isle of Lewis. And you can see the series of weirs that have been made to make these fishing pools in this big business up here. So it turns out that some time ago, I wrote a poem about fish farming, which I think I'm going to skip and come towards the end. I'd like to mention new Georgics, a term used by Pippa Marland about farming that doesn't just wrestle and or work with nature, but is orientated to increasing nature itself by farming for biodiversity as an agricultural end in itself. And of course, this is very much of the moment, isn't it? I've been thinking about the fact that English pastoral barely mentions the fact that actually James Rebanks has another source of income. And his two books about sheep farming don't actually contributes the whole of feeding his family. And so I've been thinking about diversification, Georgic. James Rebanks says in English Pastoral, sadly, it means earning money away from the farm when we have to. Well, actually, he's a part-time advisor to UNESCO and director of Rebanks Consulting Limited, which he established in 2003 after he got his double first in modern history at Oxford. So there's a kind of complication going on there. Finally, I'm coming towards Nomadic Georgic in the novel 13 Moons by Charles Frazier, which is the Georgic activity of Native American nations moving through landscapes. And very recently, a book I got very excited about is a futuristic Georgic in the new wilderness, where people discover these practices of survival. Diane Cook acknowledges having learned some of these Georgic activities from 8 different Native American nations, which she acknowledges in that book. This is different from Transhumance Georgic, Norwegian pastoral literature discussed in Green Letters recently. So here's a book which I'm very enthusiastic about. I wanted to end with the voice of the farmer. And thanks to Pippa Marlin for letting me use this before she publishes this in Green Letters. Here is Dafydd Morris Jones from Mid Wales, a hill farmer. One thing that concerns me in terms of public discourse is that there needs to be a better academic understanding of agriculture so that it starts feeding public discussion. I've noticed over the last 30 years, public or other academic funding for funding agricultural research has fallen significantly, at the same time as conservation funding has risen through the roof. We've got a lot of data that's 35, 40 years old. Until we've got a good academic base back up again, which is what we used to intensify farming in the 70s and 80s, we're not really going to have an accurate reflection, even in academic discourse, about what agriculture looks like now. So here's a critique coming back at us from a Welsh sheep hill farmer. But I thought I would end with the voice of nature just up the road from me at Godney Farm. And here is the voice of nature and the effect of global heating, flooding what should be dairy cow grazing fields for Godney Farm. And you'll see that their farm name is associated with Arla Foods, which is a farmer-owned company and the world's largest producer of organic dairy products. You'll see that closer to nature, at the bottom of that farm sign, has actually been trademarked. You can trademark being closer to nature, but maybe nature is getting a little too close to this well-intentioned, organically based dairy farm here on the edge of the Levels in Somerset. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Terry. There's so much rich material there. And I think apart from anything else, you've left us in no doubt that we seem to be in the midst of an efflorescence of Georgic occurring, interestingly, you know, right at a time when, you know, we have to really fundamentally rethink the way that we produce food. So, you know, it's one of those moments, you know, like you talked about the resurgence of the Georgic in the 18th century with the beginnings of, you know, the intensification of farming. And now here we are again in a kind of new phase of transformation, hopefully transformation in agricultural practices. So, yeah. That's really terrific. So we do have some time for questions and comments. While you're gathering your thoughts and taking a breath, I thought I'd just ask Sam Walton if she would like to give us a little preview of our next Centre for Environment and Humanities presentation. I can see you there, Sam. Great. Thanks. Go for it.
Hi. Hi. That was amazing, Terry. I've got questions for you as well.
Great.
I will hopefully effortlessly segue into those. But yes, the next talk is 17th of February. I'm really excited to welcome Chawamwa Dema to talk as part of the CEH series. TJ is a poet, a teaching artist who has been shortlisted for the Bristol City Poet Award and longlisted for the Women Poets Prize. She's an honorary senior research associate at the University of Bristol and co-produces the Africa Writes Bristol Festival. In her award-winning collection, The Careless Seamstress, she explores themes including the gendering of labor, the female gaze, the arts of listening, interweaving the politics of the personal into the eco-poetic. She's an absolutely electrifying reader. I was really excited and kind of got goosebumps seeing her read in Bristol, which feels like a very long time ago now, a live event in 2019. But we're going to be able to talk about eco-poetry, tackling the challenge of eco-literacy, and also get to hear from her read from recent work and to discuss her current collaborative work, which focuses on how ethnicity complicates access, belonging, and perceptions of nature. So please do join us. Is it okay to segue into a question for Terry?
Yeah, well, actually, I just wanted to say actually that she is with us here tonight, I believe, which is very nice. So we will continue our poetry discussion next time. And Sam, yes, while you've got the word, go ahead.
Oh, yes. I just had a couple more ideas of Georgic. I was thinking about Relocation Georgic and Tamsin Khalidis's book, I Am an Island, which is a sort of Londoner who can't handle Notting Hill anymore, moving to an island in Scotland and kind of imagining that she's entering this wilderness, which is actually, you know, a communitarian culture with its own internal politics that she treats in, if Scottish Twitter is anything to go by, an extremely patronising way. So I was thinking about the kind of the politics of relocation Georgic, and also decolonial Georgic as well. I've been reading a lot of Bessie Head's writing recently, and her work in Botswana to kind of to work in community farm and to see farming as an act of decolonization and community formation. Just a couple of recent examples of Tamsin Khalidis' recent Bessie Head from the 1970s.
Thanks, Sam. Isn't it interesting how you know, Georgic doesn't appear in eco-critical discussions very much at all, and yet once you start looking, my word, there's a lot of really exciting, interesting, and thought-provoking stuff out there. Thank you.
I've got a number of hands I can see here. I think Anna might be the first. Anna Selby, if you'd like to go.
Hiya. I wanted to ask about living farmer poets from around the world. I know of a few, like Tagara Mazanamu in Zimbabwe and Yu Shua in China, but I wondered if, Terry, you knew any others or if anyone else did.
No. But that's great. I mean, let's open this up. I'd be grateful if you'd send me those examples.
Do you want to put them in the chat?
I will put them in the chat, yeah, because also I was thinking about foraging poets and allotment poets, like the different ways we get food and we grow food nowadays. But yeah, I'll put them in the chat now.
There is an allotment poet called Matt Black in Sheffield who some time ago now produced a volume about his plot, I remember, and I've completely not included it. Thank you very much.
Bricken, I think I saw your hand go up next.
Hi, yes, my hand did metaphorically go up, but I'll actually put it up now. hi, Terry. Hi. Good to see you and everyone. And thank you for a fascinating talk, and it's opened up sort of possibilities. But for me, I am working on Georgic at the moment. I'm doing some work on James Granger's The Sugar Cane, which is an example of 18th century colonial Georgic about sugar growing in the Caribbean. That's just to let you know what I'm doing. But actually, it does raise questions about the boundaries of the Georgic. And this is something I've been thinking about quite a lot lately. I mean, James Granger is a doctor and a sort of amateur botanist, and as well as a planter, which is an agricultural worker of sorts in the 18th century. I keep on coming back to this idea of at what point does your work, when you represent it in poetry at any rate, start being Georgic and stop being Georgic? So, for example, if I'm lolling on a grassy mead, it's quite clear that and I'm writing about that in the poem, it's quite clear that's pastoral in a sense. If I then get up, pick up my scythe and start mowing that meadow, then it becomes Georgic labour. But what if I throw down a quadrat and start taking an ecological survey? It's still labour, but is it really fit into pastoral Georgic or something else? Is there a scientific poetry that we might be looking at as a separate, or an ecological poetry about the practice of ecology that we might think of as another sort of subset of rural literature? It's the same, you know. Is bird watching pastoral and ornithology Georgic if I'm doing it in the countryside, and so on? There seems to me an awful lot of distinctions here about what, I mean, another example, is filling in my tax return, describing filling in my tax return Georgic if I happen to be a farmer who's doing my tax return, the boundary, and I know that drawing boundaries is never a precise science, but you know, there seems to be all sorts of issues here. And then just to come back to think about, you know, Bessie Head and Chinua Achebe and all sorts of people in Africa and around the world who write about pastoral, who write about farming practices in a way that we might think of as Georgic, but who aren't perhaps like those 18th century writers deliberately riffing off Virgil and imitating Virgil in a very precise sense. And do we have to be imitating Virgil or working within the tradition of Virgil to count ourselves as Georgic poets, I wonder? Sorry, two questions there and quite detailed, but I'll shut up now and let you speak.
One is, at the beginning, I demonstrated that Virgil himself embeds moments of pastoral in the Georgics and has Georgic references in the pastoral, so yes. And the other thing is, I don't think the labels matter, except in so far as they help us to ask questions about authenticity, about focus, and about value as well. I appear to be hung up on labels, but labels are only a means to an end to me. And you know, the point about book four of the Georgic ending up with the myth of Orpheus enables Samuel in his study of Seamus Heaney's Georgic poetry to show how Heaney begins with a farm implement but ends up the poem quite some way away from that. Yeah. So, you know, authenticity, knowledge, all of those elements are important to Georgic. And I offered two little definitions of my own. I do want to engage with nature, so I find it very hard to argue that any didactic work about how to do a job is a Georgic work.
Okay.
Tradition? Do we have to be writing in the tradition of Virgil?
No, the tradition of Virgil has been changed, ever since. No, not at all. I just like going back to the complexity of Virgil because it reminds us how flexible those boundaries are.
Terrific. Okay, Sarah or Peter? Don't forget to turn your mic on, Sarah, because we can't hear you at the moment. No, we still can't hear you, unfortunately.
go to the bottom bar and click the microphone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. It was quite a simple question, really. When we lost the sound of it, you were just talking about Melissa Harrison and James Rebanks. Were you saying that Melissa Harrison was more pastoral and James Rebanks was more Georgic? Although, obviously, is that what you were saying at that point? Because we lost the sound a little bit there.
Oh, sorry. I was saying that All Among the Barley is not really Georgic. It doesn't actually have the authenticity and the detail of farming practices in it. But compared with, you know, Tim Peer's West Country trilogy, but that it's a better novel, actually. Mm. And being Georgic is not necessarily good. I mean, to answer Bracken's question, you know, being Georgic is not in itself good. I then want to ask, you know, what kind of quality novel is it? And I think Rebanks is almost entirely Georgic in his detail, isn't he, and in his knowledge. But I wonder if those books aren't serving a pastoral function for its readers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Seiji, I think your hand went up next. So have I got the name right? Your name comes up as Seiji MC.
That's Hugh.
Hugh. Why is that strange name, Hugh?
I realise that's my son's Minecraft name. I don't know how it's got in here. He's obviously been on my computer playing Minecraft, and that's what's happened. Yeah. I've just realised.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, here I am anyway. I'm not in Minecraft. Thanks, Terry. There were two things, but the first one is, where does the Georgic and the anti-pastoral divide, in the sense that, you know, I remember in your book, The Pastor, you talked about the anti-pastoral and how the anti-pastoral is often drawing attention to the realities of agricultural life. Do you think
my example from The Thresher's Labour is that the function of Stephen Duck's text is to correct, in an anti-pastoral function, the idealizations of Alexander Pope. In doing so, he writes a Georgic because he knows the stuff. He's presenting the detail of labor as an anti-pastoral function. And so I think they can both be the same thing. They overlap, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's interesting. All right. And the other thing I was just going to ask if I've got time is that you talked about the Georgic being a mode, not a concept. I don't know if you could say a little more about that, what you mean, quite what that is.
Yeah, sure. I think that the discipline of detail in the Georgic, if it's present, prevents it from being an abstract construction. And some of those prefix pastorals are actually conceptual constructions, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the use of urban pastoral is barely about pastoral at all. But because Georgic always has that knowing detail of practice and technique and discipline, I think that prevents it from being used in that conceptual way.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
We're running a little bit short of time, so I'm going to now take two questions at a time. So Matthew and Tess, if you'd each like to ask your questions, and I'll ask Terry to answer both of them together.
Hi, Tess.
Hi. Shall I go first?
Go first. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much, Terry, for that great talk. I was really interested in your definition of Georgic that you gave near the start about relishing the detail of husbandry, learning the rules for growing stuff. And you had the phrase, adapting and learning with honesty and authenticity. And your inclusion of that suggests that you've come across texts that are about adapting and learning to work with the land, but are dishonest and inauthentic. So I was just wondering, is that the case? And if so, what are some of those texts that you are thinking of there?
Just hold that question. Terry, hold that question. I'll get Matthew to ask his as well. Yeah.
Yes, thanks, Terry. It's been a fantastic talk. I just wanted to ask briefly, where do you stand on whether gardening can be Georgic? Because you cited Sackville West's the land, but then you didn't mention the garden. And I was just thinking, Axel popped up in the chat saying, you know, you've inspired him to go away and look at gardening literature. And I found when I was reading The Garden by Sackville West that she faces the difficulty of this lacks the sort of kind of honesty and authenticity of working in the fields. You know, how can I write it? And she often kind of gets into quandaries with that. So that was my question.
Sackville West is really writing about an estate, isn't she? I mean, I know she's known for her garden, but actually she's her grandson, Adam Nicholson, was very critical about that text to me and said it was her answer to the wasteland, and it was totally idealized, and she never herself got her hands dirty and all that stuff, right? So certainly gardening texts, horticultural Georgic, is something that I've neglected in this talk. I owned up to that. But it is very much in the Georgic tradition. But Sackville West's text is a very interesting one, because I think she wants to be Georgic, doesn't she? She wants to give you the details of seasonal husbandry through the year, but she doesn't actually do it herself. And so often when you're reading, you wonder about that. Tess's question is very interesting, because the question I put to Pippa, you know, where is the anti-nature Georgic activity, as it were? And I was thinking about industrial farming and couldn't think of examples until I realized that John Kinsella would give me some examples of writing about huge scale industrial farming. But I'd be interested to know examples of anti-nature Georgic activity in literature.
Okay, let's have another pair, we've only got about 5 minutes, so let's try and be concise. Pippa and Sue.
I just switched on. Hello. I don't know if you can see me yet.
Yep.
Okay, you can hear me. Great. Thank you, Terry. That was fantastic. Really enjoyed that. This is a kind of response, not a question, but very much inspired by what you said. So I'll try and keep it short. It's just, I think your distinction between George Monbiot and Isabella Tree is actually really brilliant, that actually the rewilding discourse is probably linked to pastoral in all kinds of ways. And I think there's a really interesting discourse of the kind of new Georgic, not called rewilding, but in effect restoring biodiversity, which is things like regenerative farming, wilder farming, nature-friendly farming. And I think there is a kind of divide between the sort of the Georgic elements and the pastoral elements of rewilding. So that was just something I'd really like to kind of think further about. Sorry, not really a question.
Great. Sue.
Hi, Terry. Thank you so much for your talk, and thank you particularly for your tiny nod to horticultural Georgic with my sprouting broccoli. It's such a pleasure to see my plants out there. We should do more about horticultural Georgic, and I'm working on that presently. But can I just mention for the Georgic lyric, some poets, I'm thinking of Clare, because I always tend to come back to John Clare. The work of the land is contained within the work of producing a lyric, a small form, and that containment becomes a Georgic thing in itself. And I'm wondering whether you've got any comments about about that. I mean, I coined this term Georgic lyric, and I want to use it in essence.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about that, isn't there? Because much of this Georgic poetry is actually quite long form, isn't it, in the tradition of the Georgics. I'm just going to say, Kate, that I'm looking forward to learning from each of these last two speakers in their forthcoming publications, and to cite them in my revision of this, so I can't wait.
We have a lot of wonderful specialists here tonight. It's a shame that we can't sort of sit around a table or sit with a glass of beer and continue this conversation. But just before we finish, Jack, would you like to ask a question? And Bricken, if you got your hand up again, or was that from before? No, so it's just Jack. We'll finish with a question from Jack.
Okay. Thank you. Can everyone hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, if people can tolerate one more question, I'll get mine in at the end. But thank you, Terry. It's great to see such a long and detailed lecture on the Georgic. It's long overdue. I just wanted to come back to Seamus Heaney, actually. Speaking of lyric Georgic, and there's quite a bit of evidence that Heaney was conscious of the Georgic, especially later in his career. But he writes in The Staying Power of Pastoral that the pastoral requires at least a minimal awareness on behalf of the poet and the reader for it to work. And I just wondered if you thought the same was true for the Georgic. And I'll leave it there. I'll leave it as a simple question.
Heaney did a great review, very interesting review, didn't he, of Peter Fallon's translation of the Georgics. I still recommend Peter Fallon's translation, incidentally, of the Georgics, as though the Georgics were written by an Irish farmer, I think Heaney is a fascinating example because he really extends, I think, the possibilities of the Georgic in all sorts of dimensions. I mean, one of the dimensions missing has been gender in this discussion, and the domestic Georgic of his mother and his aunt in the household actually using the products of farming in a practical way, I would want to include in Georgic. Samuel has been doing some terrific work on the range of different kinds of Georgic in Heaney's poetry. I think Heaney is a model for the directions and dimensions that Georgic lyric poetry might go in.
Thank you.
Just to, at the risk of embarrassing him, Sam, do you want to say, give a wave? Sam Lushun was a visiting PhD student at Bath Spa for a year last year from Shanghai Normal. And so he was